The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is Shane Settner.
Yo.
And Blair Settner.
Hello.
We normally talk about movies. Our usual routine here at the Mediocre Movie Club is to pick three movies amongst ourselves, write about them, and reunite at the end of the month to discuss them. And sometimes we sprinkle in-depth type stuff. We talked about First Reformed in the past, in eighth grade, and sometimes we talk about TV, and we've been discussing Watchmen, and that's what we're doing tonight. We're continuing our talk of this first season of Watchmen.
I was pretty sure we were doing a sports podcast about Evansville defeating Kentucky.
I don't know. It might come up. It seems like a big deal.
I'm sure.
I didn't know what happened until after the fact, so good for them, I suppose.
I'm sure.
Good for us.
We played a major part in that victory.
Now maybe you'll get that raise at work you deserve. They'll be like, oh, didn't you go to Evansville? Let's give you a raise.
Well, Shane, it may surprise you to hear that that's already happened.
Oh.
I'm now running the entire department at my lab because,
sports.
I went to a school that won a game of basketball. They weren't supposed to win. You can probably, string together some nucleotides, some peptides, and yeah, you can totally do that. Those things are one-to-one.
Good chemistry on the court and in the lab.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. I think, this is why the farm industry is doing so well, because they've linked who should run what to how good their alma maters are doing in basketball. So, yeah, Evansville finally getting some wage growth.
Yeah.
It's about time. It's just been in the basement for a real long time. A lot of starving purple aces with biology degrees out there. No more!
Yeah.
No more. We are not here to discuss sports. We're here to discuss the last two episodes of Watchmen, the fourth and fifth, entitled If You Don't Like My Story, Write Your Own, and the fifth episode entitled Little Fear of Lightning. We're going to, these have been a little shorter. We're going to stick to that probably today, but, we'll see how it goes. We don't go like we do with Game of Thrones, did with Game of Thrones, where we're just going beat by beat. We're just going to hit the high points, discuss some things that we've been returning to in the last few episodes about this series, and go from there. So, as usual, one character who's off on his own in these two episodes is Ozymandias, Jeremy Irons. We still don't really know where he is after these two episodes. We are getting a better and better sense of what his life is like and what the restrictions are on him. Maybe he's on the moon of Jupiter.
So it seems like.
Is he on the moon of Jupiter, or does he transport into a moon of Jupiter? We see that he finally has figured out the spacesuit that he's been working on. He finally figured out the trebuchet. He's been fleeing dead clones up and up and up. And he felt confident enough in this test to fling himself up. He lands on a moon of Jupiter, which I believe to be Europa. And because there are so many corpses up there, he spells out, "Save me," just in time for a satellite to capture that message. This remains a mysterious and funny part of the show. We see where the clones come from. In the fourth episode, there's a magic lake where he pulls up weird-looking babies and sticks them in a pod and spins them up, and they turn into full-grown adults. So, I don't know. Fine.
It's a baby lake. It's a farming baby lake.
Yeah, oh. I don't know why we would have further questions about that. It's just your normal average baby lake, and you're even more predictable and average super growth tube. So
it's
super normal, run of the mill type stuff.
The crying land. The crying baby. Like, while he's eating a cake or whatever he's eating.
He eats a lot of cake, yeah.
That was really difficult for me to listen to.
Yes. Yeah.
How stressful was the inspecting of the babies in the lobster cage?
Gosh.
And then just
chucking them back.
Chucking them. We're going to return to this as far as how this alternative universe treats clones and the act of cloning. It's a recurring theme in these two episodes. This is just one instance where biological material has kind of been reduced to exactly that. It's just, if it's chuck it back in the lake.
Throw it in the incinerator.
Yes. Yeah. We're going to come back to it.
It's this It's really weird to describe all the Ozymandias scenes as delightful, but they're delightful.
They're fun. Jeremy Irons is a great actor. He's long been a great actor. He started a movie called Dead Ringers in the late 80s, where he plays a pair of twins who are gynecologists. And it's a David Cronenberg movie. He of the body horror genre. So it goes from there. It's a great movie. He's very good in it. That's like a career peak for him, but he's, you know, kept at that level since then. And this is kind of in that zone of mad scientist type of stuff. He's very good at it. He's very mysterious, while also being super aristocratic while he's massacring all of his clones off of camera and having new clones dispose of them and fling them up into the sky and land on Europa and so on and so on and so on. This is a weird show. He's at a weird center of it.
And I don't know, as someone who's supposed to be the smartest man in the world, in isolation, this kind of makes sense as an ultimate destiny.
Yeah, supposedly every episode is a year of his existence there. Like, every time they bring him a cake, a year has gone by.
Ah.
I don't know if that's... like, that is accurate, I think. Damon Lindelof is talking a lot about this show in a way that I don't think he should. It kind of annoys me when people explain their shit all the time. Just let it linger out there. This seems like a show that doesn't... that has enough interest to where people will find their own answers. And, I don't know, the creator doesn't need to just blurt some shit out, as Damon Lindelof appears to be doing. But again, maybe he's learned his lesson from Lost, and he doesn't want to indulge all of the disappointed people. If they do end up being disappointed by the end of Watchmen, who knows when that happens. But he, Ozymandias ends this period being kicked in the face by the warden, and he's in trouble. I don't know why he's in trouble. He's not in trouble because he keeps murdering all these clones and tossing these babies back into the lake. He's in trouble because he tried to escape. Or did he? I don't know. Very lost. Very lost. Very lost type stuff here. Who knows what's happening? Moving on. The fifth episode focuses on Looking Glass, whose non-vigilante name I don't remember. We see an origin story for him. He was proselytizing in New Jersey on the day of the squid attack, which we see in all its glory here. We see the squid draped across buildings in New York. He survived, but everybody around him died. And it's a pretty great opening scene to the fifth episode. To figure some stuff out.
Fantastic. And I love how they're doing all these origin stories within this whole larger arc. Just really... I guess the larger arc is the A story, and each one has this origin story, B story. Is that kind of what it feels like?
Yeah, we kind of thought in the earlier episodes when the season started that each episode would start with like a flashback to some relevant piece of real or imagined history. That was the case with the first two episodes. We'll talk about Lady True here shortly, but this episode is really all about Looking Glass and just like this formative incident in his life and how it has radiated out and driven all of his decisions since then. We see that he takes a lot of elaborate anti-psychic precautions. He's got a bunker, he's got an alarm system, he covers his hats in the same reflective material that he uses for a mask, because this supposedly reflects squid psychic rays back into the ether.
Also, he didn't die because he was in a bunch of mirrors, right?
I guess, who knows?
Because there are other people around him who survived as well.
Yeah, the climbing out, I'm sure it's just a question of like standing in the right place. Like, a nuclear bomb doesn't kill everybody. It just kills most people. Not that this was a nuclear bomb necessarily, but like, who knows why some people survive and some don't.
Yeah, we know.
I think the mirror motif is very central to the character of Looking Glass.
Mirror guy,
thank you. If we can just pick and choose how you want to refer to him. Whatever his real name is, I don't think it doesn't seem like anybody, either of us know what that is. So there's a third option out there, too.
I can't remember it either.
Neither can I. He is abducted by the cavalry in a honey trap by everyone's favorite gem whore, Trixie, otherwise known as Paula Malcolmson. Unless you guys are preferable with Dolly, unless she's your favorite, or Jen.
No, I mean, Trix is my favorite.
Yeah, Trix, she had the most lines. Yeah. Jewel does not count, but, you know, there's always the story of the guy who comes in with a nickel. But we all know that was just a lie that I was telling people he would never. that's about, if you go back in our feed, you can listen to all of our Deadwood talk. We see that the senator, who we obviously suspected as being shady, is the leader of the of this particular branch of the cavalry. Don Johnson led his own division, although he is now dead, of course. They have a portal that they're throwing a basketball into. And they also have a video of Ozymandias briefing Robert Redford on what he did with the squid and how that was an elaborate ruse with a goal that worked. And apparently they show this to every new senator who lands in certain committees. I like this in the moment. And as time has gone by, I think this is really, really silly. If it is what it is supposed to be, this is a conspiratorial show. So maybe that's a fake. Maybe it's like a deep fake. It certainly exists in our world. I don't know. That just seems like a very stupid and silly thing to spread around.
I don't know if it did. I mean, people, I assume that was made, and someone said it took forever to get a copy out, right?
It took him 2 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's made by, if it's real, it's made by an arrogant, self-absorbed guy who wants to take credit, but he knows he can't, but he can't help but say something. It's like Wag the Dog. I don't know if you remember that, the director, they're like, well, we got to kill him now because
he can't stop talking. I haven't seen that movie, but I know of it.
Yeah, so, alert from a movie 20 years ago, but
the idea that you would just keep bringing in new people to this and showing them this video for no reason, what is the advantage of showing
because new senators? The reigning squids is a legitimate government conspiracy, and they have to rain squids down every once in a while to keep everyone
on
the same side.
I don't see any reason why. If Ozymandias can pick the right clone baby, I see no reason why he can't generate squid falls by himself.
But he's out.
Maybe? I don't know.
Maybe not. Seems like he's on a moon somewhere and stuck.
I don't think it's crazy that Ozymandias would want someone to know, and someone, and the person that who is reaping the benefit of this, i.e. Robert Redford, to know where his bread is buttered. I think it's insane that Robert Redford would show this to anyone.
Sure. But I mean, again, it's like,
and I think people need to know that Robert Redford is not in the same party as a guy from Oklahoma. This just seems like a really dumb conspiracy.
I don't know.
It seems like it's a fine, smart conspiracy at the beginning, but just you can't bring all these people into it. It's stupid.
Also, and you might have to edit this out because this might be a dumb question, but what?
Yeah, we edit all those out.
Okay. Please
replace Brian. Yeah. If you're asking what a character's name is,
I'm not doing
that. We don't know what these characters' names are. Blair does not listen to our podcast.
Okay, the Calvary's connection to the squid stuff and Adrian Veidt, what is that? Is the Calvary actually racist? I don't understand.
Yeah, this is, I think, something that the show is going to shade more and more away from. Like, they are nakedly racist, but they're also right. Like, they're correct in having the secret knowledge about the world. In the comic, like, the masks that they wear are the masks of, like, a right-wing, semi-fascist vigilante who knew the truth, who was killed because he was going to tell everybody, but he dropped his journal, which had all this information in, like, the news desk for a right-wing, far-right magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So if they published it outright, or if they just circulated it underground, who knows? But I think the Calvary, even without this semi-dumb video, no, they all would have read Rorschach's journal because they've modeled themselves after him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, they are racist, but they also know that the entire world is a lie.
The senator...
And the beneficiaries of this world are, in the show's telling, black people who have been paid reparations in the form of not having to pay taxes anymore. And whether or not that is like valid public policy, it happened because Robert Redford was ushered into the presidency after, you know, world peace broke out, and this was something that he did, and they're angry because they know in a different, if the world spun differently and this thing didn't happen, you know, maybe that wouldn't have been the case. So it can't be as simple as just like race is bad. Like, we kind of hope this in Game of Thrones too, like zombies bad, like that's just boring.
Yeah, but it seems like there are people like the senator and who's the dude who got killed at the beginning?
Sure.
The chief of police that seemingly aren't racist, but are the heads of these. And they
and
like
the
senator
telling,
says,
they took over after the White Knight, where they killed all the police officers in Tulsa and pushed them towards a more moderate path. Or did they? Because
right.
they're going to do something with this portal.
Right.
See, and they, but they, just like the senator talks about it, he's out there saying, you know, okay, we're, he differentiates himself and Judd, the chief, police chief, differentiates himself from these other guys saying, yeah, we're not these idiots. That's why we're here. Like, you know, basically wanking at the race stuff. And, but they don't see themselves as complicit, which... I mean, isn't that how it all is? I was just listening to NPR
thing. It just depends what their plan is, I guess. Like, they're not complicit, maybe,
like,
in the White Knight stuff. What are they really doing since then?
Right.
Maybe there
they're
extremist
keeping
factions that are doing this, like, suicide. I don't know. There's just so much information left on the table still.
Yeah.
I just think it's really, again, another well-written, nuanced part of it.
Yeah.
Like, just like listening to, and like This American Life this week, where they're talking with these people who are doing the border interviews, and you can tell they feel like they're the good guys, but only one person quit that job and refused to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, or refused to, you know, cite any law at all, these clearly illegal interviews. So they're all complicit, but they feel like they're the good guys. But then again, if you don't have good, it's like we're talking, you have jury duty soon.
Mm-hmm.
And you're on the right side of criminal punishment,
think so.
and how it should be lessened. So, especially with drugs, but you'll never be on a jury because you would probably say something. I don't believe someone should go to jail for possession of drugs.
I might say that. Yes.
So, but then you're exactly the person that needs to be on the jury. So it's like, okay, are you complicit? Are you purely complicit in a system where you're going along but trying to minimize damage? Are you actually doing any of that? Are you doing any good there?
Sure.
Or are you just another asshole?
And I think there's a continuing question as far as what's justified in suppressing these people who may or may not deserve to be suppressed in the first place. We haven't seen a lot of cop abuse in this last couple episodes, but some of the cop abuse doesn't exist in the show in earlier episodes. So we see... We're a little off track here, but we see that Lori, the FBI agent, has, you know, decided that they generated no leads and no information from their torture chambers and their black sites. So that was all for nothing. I believe that is a thing that happens. Well, not believe. I know that is a thing that happens. You can't generate. There's a movie coming out shortly called The Report, which is about the torture report that was generated in the early 2010s, about all the shit we did in Iraq and Afghanistan and all over the world, and how that's all just retribution and uselessness, and you can't bring it into a court of law, and you can't bring any of this, that shit out in the public. It all happened in secret. So what is the point of any of it? You're all turning yourselves into monsters and useless morons who are making bad choices out of revenge. And then you're just no better than vigilantes at this point. It's a complicated show. There's a lot going on. So back to Looking Glass, who's, again, name we don't know. He, during this meeting, is induced by the senator to rat out Angela, who is digging up a lot of dirt and cutting a lot of corners about her grandfather, covering a lot of stuff up. He does so, but in anticipation of the next episode, she downs the pills that her grandfather had before his arrest. It turns out those are an illegal memory-inducing drug. It seems like you can get memories implanted into the drugs, and you take them, and then you have the memories. I'm sure we're going to get a lot of backstory about her grandfather in the next episode. And the last we see of him, in, I think, a pretty brilliant stroke, he throws out his replacement alarm, but he can't help himself. He goes back and gets it, and the camera lingers on the trash can as the cavalry aggressively shows up and stalks into his house, shotguns cocked. So maybe this is the last we see of Looking Glass? Who knows? I love the idea that you can't just find out your life is a lie and immediately flip the chessboard over. It's going to take some time for him to work up to it. I hope that he is not dead, because this seems like a psychologically rich character.
Yeah, like, he's got his rituals and cannot, you just can't just ditch your rituals even when faced with evidence.
The fourth episode introduces Lady True, who is a pharma trillionaire who bought Adrian Veidt's companies, and after he got exiled past the asteroid belt, or did he, who knows. She's setting up shop in Tulsa. We see her at a period of time, who knows when, in relation to the show. Maybe that's what she's building her tower on top of. The first we see of her, she's enticing a childless farming couple to sell their land to her, and as a sweetener, she presents them with one of their babies that she cloned because she owns fertility clinics. Suggests she's going to kill the baby if they don't take it. I think she probably would have, which I find very amusing. but the couple gladly signs their property over, just as something lands on their property, and Lady True, played by Hong Chow, gladly takes receipt of whatever is landing there. This is a great scene, I think. I was very tired during the fourth episode, and I fell asleep during part of it. I didn't fall asleep during this part of it. This just the way that she is pressuring these people and being pretty rude, but knowing that they're going to eventually fold to her, I think this is a very interesting new character who has no basis in the comics and is a wholesale invention of the show. She knows a whole bunch of stuff. She has the grandfather with her. They talk about how his plan is stupid and overly complicated, which I think is a fun meta trick.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, those characters know all about what the plan is. They wouldn't discuss it amongst each other, as you know, but for the person listening, here's what we're doing. So, okay, fine, mysteriousness.
She doesn't say it's a clone baby. She says that she has there, that they went to a fertility clinic years ago, and then I guess that she's able to use to make them because she said it's their genetic baby. Do we believe this?
I think it's...
It's totally within the realm. Yeah. Okay.
It seems like cloning has been cracked.
Yeah.
And once you have this genetic material, there's a question of, you know, can this egg withstand, or can this egg, you know, divide and turn into a human? Well, you can take the DNA out of the egg and put it into a different egg, and maybe that's the difference. Maybe there's something wrong, and maybe the DNA is fine. Maybe just the machinery in the egg itself is shitty. We do this now.
Yeah.
There are three parent babies that exist in the world. And when people are like teleporting basketballs all over the place, I think, and pulling babies out of lakes. I don't know how people feel about cloning. It seems like everybody is totally fine with it. Which again, we're gonna revisit. the last thing about Lady True is that she's named after an ancient Vietnamese hero who resisted the Chinese invaders. Of course, in this context, the Chinese invaders would be the American invaders, and she is potentially the one resisting them. Maybe she's seeking revenge. We see that she's feeding her daughter the equivalent of the nostalgia pills. She's infusing a memory into her, probably her own memory of fleeing American soldiers and Dr. Manhattan in Vietnam. So she's probably got some kind of secret plan that may or may not be totally justified.
A lot of Rorschach approaches to everything, where here's why it's the ultimate good, but I'll do whatever it takes to get this done.
Right? Like an Ozymandias plan, you mean?
Or I guess it's Ozymandias, yeah. more so.
Rorschach was very much like,
yeah,
truth, truth, truth. The direct approach is best.
Gotcha. Okay.
Whereas Ozymandias, yes, is sidestepping that. And she has statues to Ozymandias in her Vitalia, whatever mm-hmm. that room was called. Mm-hmm. So she's obviously a devotee. Maybe she knows everything. Who knows? She's obviously not building a clock, even though it tells time in her telling. Great, great new character. Strong actor, as is par for the course. Speaking of strong actors, Angela is more of the focus in the fourth episode. She's just learning more about her ancestors. She didn't know anything about her great-grandparents, who we've been tracking in those first couple episodes. Didn't know he served in World War I. Didn't know he was supposed to have died in the Tulsa riots. Maybe he did, as far as the cultural center thinks. Her grandfather was killed in the riots as well. She knows otherwise. There's a fun aside in my interpretation, of Angela's husband speaking with their adopted children. They ask what happened to Don Johnson, the sheriff, and is he in heaven? And the husband just very directly and firmly, but kindly, says that's a lie. That's pretend. Even better.
Heaven
is pretend. He didn't exist. He was a baby. He was an adult. He died. He doesn't exist anymore.
He's nowhere.
And they're fine with it. They are hungry for waffles.
Yeah.
As we all are.
And John is visibly aroused right now.
The table is levitating. Who let Dr. Manhattan in here? They're fine. They're not like, oh my gosh, my world has been destroyed. What a sad, miserable place we all live in. No, they're fine. They'll adapt to whatever you tell them. That said, it's still shocking for an adult to say that to a child, even if you feel the exact same way as the father. Just generations have to go by before this becomes truly acceptable.
I don't know if you know this, but in our will, we've granted you custody of both of our children. How long are you going to wait if we die? How long are you going to wait to tell them that we're nowhere? Congrats, by the way.
This is the first thing I have to worry about is when do I blow the world up. I would wait until they were able to sleep through the night, I guess. And then once they figured out, you know, how to comfort themselves, I would introduce a new layer. It's like, you know, their bones exist somewhere, I would probably tell them. But they're gone.
They're nowhere. The actor says.
They're being reincorporated into the fabric.
But they'll always be in your hearts.
Yeah, fine, whatever. But what does that mean? There'll always be a series of connections of neurons in your brain. But then you'll go into the ground at one point, too.
It's good.
Yeah, and then I would make them waffles, and everything would be fine.
Oh, that sounds lovely. We made the right
choice.
And then I would tell them,
your parents made a mistake in your will, and I'm taking you to Indiana.
The thing they were trying to prevent, going back to Indiana.
Weird shit in this episode. We talked about the baby cloning that was integral to Ozymandias' plot, was not integral to the show, which is just like a fun little Easter egg, is the pet cloning facilities. And just a delightful scene. A delightful scene that didn't have to exist in the show. It's just a fun treat for viewers like me, where Looking Glass's ex works at one of these places. She clones pets. She clones dogs. She's got a nice, cute little puppy, white-haired puppy in front of her. And she's got two other puppies that an assistant is holding. And she asks Looking Glass, these look the same to you? And the one puppy is a little smaller. Into the incinerator he goes. And we hear the flames whoosh. Oh my gosh. So good. I love this. I love this. I love this. It's just so indicative of where people are as far as their relation to all this technology. As far as this, like, sick idea that you would clone your pets, it's, I don't think it's an accident that the pill is named Nostalgia. That's just such a perverted impulse that the opposite would be generated in the satisfying of that impulse. Like, you want to... I wanna have my exact dog back that I had, even though it's gonna go through its life and nature and nurture. It's gonna be different, obviously. It's gonna have the same genes, but in the creation of those exact same genes for your own stupid, selfish purposes, there are gonna be a lot of incinerated puppies in the meantime.
Right.
I love this. I love this. I love this. You gotta fucking move on and not create this additional misery. Not misery on my part. I got a lot of joy out of this specific moment. Misery for the poor, incinerated, undersized clone dog.
I've been reading Ted Chiang's Exhalation, which is a bunch of short stories, kind of tech, sci-fi-ish. He has this great short story about these AI creations called Digients, which are created to have a certain amount of, I guess, kind of plasticity, but never just limited. And limited intelligence, supposedly, and just goes through like this whole chain of what exactly it would do. You've created these digital beings that you can go in to, like, you know, it's like future kind of, but your avatar goes in, interacts with them, and you train them, you teach them how to talk, and all these things, and then people just get bored of them, they move on, and they just turn them off.
Sure, Tamagotchis.
So, yeah, basically, yeah, but these things are, you know, are they self-aware, you know, and then people start copying them. Of course, people start torturing them. It's just, it goes on this whole path of, it's called the lifetime of, what is it? Sorry, let me get this right.
Okay.
The life cycle of software objects. Okay. And just kind of, both the cloning of the babies and these other people, where no one's seeing these as living beings. They're seeing these as objects, just like they do these digients, where some people do see them as beings.
Stuffed animals, tools to complete a job. I don't believe in, like, a zero-sum world where, like, someone's satisfaction has to come at another person's pain. But this is an example of the show very much buying into that. Just like all these fucking moron pet owners are just creating so much pain for their own narrow satisfaction. They're not seeing the rest of this process. If people knew that they were just casually stuffing dogs into incinerators... I don't know, like, no-kill shelters are a thing. People are very upset about that. But it wouldn't exist if people knew about it. But hey, you know, get me my fluffy fucking childhood animal, and I'm just over the moon. People are dumb. Angela, in a total non sequitur, this doesn't come up in the fifth episode, but she gets in a foot chase with a Green Man equivalent from Always Sunny, full bodysuit type. She feels the need to chase this person. This person runs. They douse themselves with oil and then vanish in a stormpipe, and we never hear from this specific plot thread again in that episode or the next. So, just weird shit. Cool scene.
Great scene.
Yeah. He really slid down that drainpipe. Nice and easy. But, yeah, we'll see. So, the real history segment... that we've been going back to. The show, again, like, repeatedly pulls from real history and imagines it in an alternative place. But what struck me in this episode, specifically in the fifth one, was just a level of profiteering off of disaster. My specific memory of 9/11 was watching it in school, sure, fine, but then getting home and being told you need to fill up your tank with gas, and everybody having that exact same idea at the exact same time, and it was about $1 more expensive than it had been the day before, and I waited and the thing, and blah, 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 and then shortly after that, everyone's worried about duct taping their windows and buying gas masks and shelters and so on, and people got fucking rich off of all of this nonsense, and it didn't save anybody's life, didn't make anybody feel better, made no fucking difference at all. It's just the first impulse is, how much money can I make off of this tragedy that just happened? And we see the same thing in Watchmen with these alarm systems that do nothing, this reflectomite or whatever the substance is called that does nothing, someone's making it, someone's selling it, someone's a scared person is buying it.
Yeah.
Just how it wasn't fucking... People got rich off selling flags, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't fucking the universe, the country coming together in this moment of national unity. It was people getting rich off of people's fear.
Yeah, like...
From huckster t-shirt stands at the Indy 500 all the way up to the highest levels of government.
I mean, you see it. Kevlar backpacks?
Oh my god,
give me a fucking break.
Who's running all of these gun safety drills, or is any of this vetted? Do any people know what they're talking about? They're running one at my work, and you would think with my new promotion I would be able to put a stop to this, but I'm not so powerful.
Yeah.
I need U of E to make it to the tourney at least. Yeah. And then maybe they can put a stop to shooter drills that are, again, put on by who fucking knows, but someone who's cashing their goddamn checks.
John, again, I feel like this show is made for you, mostly.
I wish they were tighter on the Redford conspiracy stuff, and I would feel better about it. That's just a real...
You got a couple episodes to bring it in. A real
nagging detail that's just out there. But, yes, the show is really plugged in. Like, we see that Looking Glass, his day job is to do market research, which is just fooling people into buying something they don't need. And, one of the things he's trying to sell is people returning to New York after it being the site of millions and millions of deaths. And, yeah, that all makes sense to me. That would 100% happen. Like, the tourism board would eventually come back and, like, we got all this expensive real estate, or at least it used to be expensive. We need people to come back here. Even though there are still squid falling from the sky. Yeah, fine, it's a lie, but everyone, as Honeypot Paula Malcolmson says, everyone is terrified all the time. But yeah, we should 100% go back to see plays on Broadway. Alternative history. We see that Steven Spielberg did not make Schindler's List, even though the movie that he does make about the squid fall, is essentially the same movie. It's still in black and white. He's still got a little girl in a red dress walking around, stunned and dazed. And, yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
He got distracted from the Holocaust, and he focused on the squid fall. Now, Steven Spielberg hasn't really made a 9/11 movie. He made World of the Worlds, which is similar. There's a lot of 9/11 imagery in that. So I don't know if he would actually have done this or not, but of course somebody would have.
It's a nice little, cute little ad, like something recognizable. I don't know. Blair pointed out,
it kind of makes sense to make a black and white Holocaust movie. It doesn't make a lot of sense to make a black and white movie set in the 80s necessarily. He's not making Francis Ha, you know?
Yeah, the black and white really added to Francis Ha.
Hey, number 8 on Jesus. The AV Club's Best of the Decade.
That's list. Fucking insulting, AV Club. Get your shit together.
And of course, also, I mean, we saw this in Avengers Endgame that, like, support groups build up around anything and everything, and of course support groups have built up around the survivors of November 2nd, which is the date of the squid fall. And we see in this that Looking Glass is taking the exact lesson that Ozymandias hoped people would. Like, this terrible thing happened, but it broke out. World peace broke out, and maybe, you know, it's all for the best. And at the end of that episode, you know, now he knows that that was all bullshit. So, maybe he's dead.
I doubt he's dead.
Probably not.
He seems like a guy who's prepared to be attacked.
I really enjoyed the 5th episode in the moment.
I'd like kinda to know.
Sliding back a little bit, and like I said, I fell asleep during the 4th episode. I like this. I really do like the show a lot. I need it to work. I need it to not be stupid. It doesn't feel stupid. I don't know. I got like a sarcastic tweet from an angry comedian that I read. He was just, like, generally cantankerous, and he was, like, slagging on this show. So he's in my head.
Like, I mean, it's absurd. It's an absurd premise. All of this is absurd. It's fine.
Watchmen, the book, is treated very seriously. Like, I feel like it won a serious prize for literature that, like, Jonathan Franzen would have won in a different year.
Well, it's absurd, but it's not good. It's not that it's not good. It can be absurd and have absurd parts of it, but that just kind of highlights, I think it goes to highlight the characters. And I mean, everything we're saying, we recognize in our world around us and the people around us, like every part of this. So the absurd parts are just the just amusing when the rest of the rest of us is what we relate to and what we find compelling.
Yeah. Something I forgot to mention in Ozymandias's tape to Robert Redford, it sure seems like the series could have been written by like a angry conservative type. Like Ozymandias is pitching a liberal utopia that is more just and more equitable and a new world, a better world. And he even uses the word utopia. And he's also a guy who sacrificed several million people on the altar to build that. It's kind of exactly what conservatives think of leftists.
Yeah.
It's exactly what they think.
It's what they think, but that I don't know. And maybe that I don't know if that's actually what it is. I mean, just because you think like, oh, that's a leftist idea.
It is. I mean, like this world has gotten more just, more equitable.
Right.
By righting historical wrongs based on, you know, this atrocity.
Yeah. I don't know. That's not actual what being on the left is all about. That's just being, it's a different kind of fascism.
Utopianism in general has led, like, that was the takeaway from the book that I mentioned I read earlier in this year about the period in Eastern Europe between 1933 and 1950 or so, like when Stalin was just wreaking havoc and then Hitler came through and wreaked havoc. Like, Hitler had his idea of a utopia. It was just a really gross one, and specifically for a specific kind of person. And so did Stalin, and they were going to make it happen at any cost.
I don't know. Even in the show, like they had Laurie Blake as a speech saying, like, God judges Ozymandias and he sends him to hell for, even though he brought peace, but he murdered a bunch of people.
Well, yeah, but like, I can't remember the joke exactly. I don't know. He sends them all to hell.
Yeah.
But then God ends up there as well.
Right.
Which is like central to the show, just like the act of having power over a person, so on and so on and so on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if I was like reviewing the show for the National Review, I would have been licking my chops during that moment. Like, yeah, maybe the show is secretly on my level.
Well, yeah, I mean, people are morons, so.
Well, yeah, we'll see.
They can't read
we'll
nuance. See. I do have one kind of stray thought or question, since we know Glasses took his most feared stressful moment and basically use that as his persona now. He's going to put that glass on his face.
Mm-hmm.
What's the worst moment of your life that you would make your mask out of, John?
I don't have heroic impulses.
Okay.
So I just wouldn't. It's just hard to imagine.
Okay.
Like, I hired, like, neighbor kids to help me yank my lawn up last spring. They asked me, like, what would you do in The Purge? They had just recently seen The Purge, and I'm like, I'd kill myself, obviously. So
you told a bunch of teenage boys that?
Yeah.
So the one white guy who lives on the street is just...
Not one, there are several.
Okay, all right. I was like, the first white guy on the street lives alone, just like, yeah, just kill myself. Pull those weeds, boys.
I think that's pretty much exactly how it went. You know, they asked, what would you do if society broke down? You could kill each other with impunity. So, like, who asked the weirder question?
That's pretty good.
So, yeah, I wouldn't be a mass vigilante.
No.
I would kill myself the first sign of trouble. Oh, these baby squids are riding on my windshield again. Time to drive off this bridge. Blair?
I actually would do the same as you. Anytime people have asked me what I would do in a zombie apocalypse,
I'd kill myself.
I would totally kill myself too. I have zero impulse to survive. Unless,
yeah, I wouldn't. At a certain point, just why bother? I guess would be my question.
If my children were alive, I would try to save them. But I
sure, yeah, and like,
would. I would be very hopeless and would just want to die.
Yeah.
John and I, although I am, I would not tell my kids that there is no afterlife. or anything like that. John and I have very similar, I don't know, life views, I would say.
Man, all right.
I'm not going to learn how to, I don't know, tie a bowline at this point in my life. It's just not going to happen. Like, if that's the difference between life and death, I don't need to know how to tie that knot. Save a shotgun shell for me. I just don't want to do it.
Fantastic.
I'm pretty committed to this specific version of existence.
Great. Great.
Shane, you could keep me alive.
I would try. And if it didn't work, I guess that would be my most tragic moment. So I just have my dead wife on my mask.
Yeah, you just do like a leather face
kind of thing. Well, I'm not going to wear it as a mask. Okay. I mean...
You could wear that awesome hat that I bought and I wore all weekend.
Oh, man.
Shane totally made fun of me.
You look so pretty in that hat.
I did.
Yeah.
Fact.
All right. Great question, Shane.
will that be edited back? Out?
No, that'll stay in. Most of that will stay in. We'll be back in a couple weeks to discuss the next two episodes of Watchmen. There are 9 in this season, so we're past the halfway point. We'll also be back in the next couple weeks to discuss our current trio of movies, in which you watch Dolemite Is My Name, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, and Private Life. And we've got a lot of fun end-of-the-decade type stuff coming up, planned. You know, stay tuned to your Facebook feeds and your Twitter feeds, where you can follow us at Mutical Movie Club and Mutical Movie Cult, respectively. Follow us on the internet at MuticalMovie.club. Thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
It was nice to listen.
Okay, that's it. Have a good night.